Family is More Than Ghouls, Strippers, and Oprah by Tremblings, read by Tsuki Nobara. Dean loves his job. He gets to visit lots of places, meet lots of people, people with breasts, see lots of strange things, and then kill them. He's a well-adjusted sort of guy. He accepts that some days you're the pigeon and some days you're the statue. It's easy for him to take the days one at a time, hop from one town to the next. He's been doing it all his life. He knew at a young age that he wasn't normal, was never going to be normal, and evolved from there. All right, so he wasn't going to marry the girl next door and crank out a couple of kids. Fine, he's all right with that, because he's got all he needs, all he's known. He's got his family, and this is like their secret thing, their special club. It's sort of the Boy Scout troop Dean never admitted he wanted to be a part of. He's learned to enjoy it. The difference, he thinks, between him and Sam is that Sam hasn't learned this. Also, Sam is allergic to fun. At the moment, this is very clear to Dean. They're at a bar in Fells Point, somewhere in Baltimore. Sam's lurking in the back, reading Dad's journal, looking for something useful, and Dean's talking to a girl. She's cute enough, and she's definitely interested, and Dean has a pretty good feeling about tonight. Hell, he's got enough beers in him to have a pretty good feeling about the whole damn week. Dean is this close to sealing the deal when Sam is suddenly right beside him, beaming, and Dean knows he's not going to like whatever his brother is going to say. I was just thinking, Sam says, that maybe it's like a necrophilia ring. He says it cheerfully, like it isn't the grossest thing Dean's ever heard. The girl is still right there, but the second the words come out of Sam's mouth, she vanishes faster than he would have believed possible. Dean thinks, with an act like that, she should be in Vegas making tigers disappear. He gives Sam a sour look, catching the eye of another girl in the process, who apparently doesn't have very sharp ears, but after that little tidbit, Dean's not exactly in the mood anymore. In Dean's opinion, Sam Winchester is the leading cause of erectile dysfunction. That's great, Sam, thanks. Dean grumbles, real informative, not at all inappropriate. Well, it fits, explains Sam, eyes wide and earnest, like he had no idea Dean was in the middle of working it. What else would be digging up bodies and leaving them around like that? I don't know, but there's got to be a less disturbing explanation for this. Except a ghoul. Dean suddenly understands Sam's innocent expression. You're an asshole, he says, and Sam laughs. Sorry, he says, and Dean knows he really isn't at all. But we've got to get this done. If it is a ghoul, which I'm pretty sure it is, it's only a matter of time before it graduates to eating kids. Dean sighs and thinks living with Sam is impossible. He wants some decent company. He wants someone with tits and an attitude. A nice girl who knows a Glock from a Walther. But like it or not, he and Sam appear to be stuck together, and even if Dean never gets laid again, it still wouldn't be as bad as the alternative, so he finishes his beer and they leave. A half hour later, they pull up outside the Westminster Presbyterian Church, and Dean says, So, if this is a ghoul, what's bringing it here? Well, I looked the place up, Sam says, and frankly, I'm surprised you and Dad haven't been here before. It's got a reputation for being one of the most haunted places in America. This place has been active for centuries, probably started when some med students started digging up the bodies for practice. Kids used to come in here all the time and move skulls around, people steal from the graves. The place is full of antsy spirits. Which is basically an invitation for a ghoul infestation. Dean sighs. Okay, so let's find them. Sam laughs. See, if I just get the boobs out of your face, you're all business. Yeah, well, all work and no play makes Sammy a dull boy. Dean says in one of his Jack Nicholson impersonations that Sam hates so much. Sam rolls his eyes and tosses Dean a flashlight. They poke around for roughly 2 minutes before the cops show up. As they're shoved into the back of the squad car, Dean shoots Sam a nasty look. Guess it didn't cross your mind to mention the cops are keeping an eye on the place, did it? Sam looks apologetic, so Dean decides not to kill him all the way, just mostly. Sam is nervous. He tries to remember what Dean has taught him. Dean has probably sat in interrogation rooms just like this one, looking innocent and wronged, more times than Sam has eaten toast for breakfast. Lesson one from Dean's big book of dealing with cops tricks is to lie, 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 and lie. What's your name, son? The cop asks in an accent unlike any Sam has ever heard in his life. It throws him for a minute, and he probably pauses just a second too long before he says, It's Gibbard, Ben Gibbard. He knows he's a terrible liar, and he knows that if Dean ever finds out about this, he will first mock him for his terrible taste in music, and then for being a terrible, terrible liar, but there's nothing he can do about it. The cop looks skeptical, but appears to put it down to nerves. And what were you doing in a cemetery at 2 o'clock at night? Sam stares mutely at the cop and has no idea what to say. Down the hall, in another interrogation room, Dean clears his throat. The officer sitting across from him says nothing. Dean clears his throat again. The officer lifts one furry, man-crunching eyebrow. "So," Dean says, "how's the family?" Over an hour later, Dean meets Sam outside the station, looking a little pissed, but under that, smug as hell. Sam knows he's been in there acting like a smartass. "This problem you have with authority figures is really starting to get in the way of business," Sam complains. Dean ignores Sam and says, "Dude, I am the bullshit king." "Telling them we're on an occult scavenger hunt?" Sam says, real inspired, a stroke of genius. "Why couldn't we have been lost or just some gothy Edgar Allan Poe fans?" "No, dude, that's not the point. You..." Dean breaks off, suddenly suspicious. "How did you know that's what I told them?" he asks, as they make their way out to the street. Sam grins and taps his head. "God damn it, Sam, I told you not to read my mind," Dean says, furious. "Well, how else was I supposed to sync up our stories? Man, why couldn't you just bend spoons or something?" Dean grumbles. Sam just laughs and decides not to mention the fact that he now knows for sure that Dean not only watches Oprah, but also reads her magazine when he sees it in convenience stores while on his junk food runs. More specifically, he decides it would be better to just order a subscription in the name of Dina Louise Winchester and let Dean figure the rest out on his own. They set up a base of operations in a motel and spend the night strategizing. They're sprawled out on two queen-size beds, Dean eating something cheesy and unholy, and Sam flipping through Dad's book like he still expects the man to have all the answers. After all this, he really should know better, he thinks to himself. "Dude, we gotta deal with this cop problem," Sam says. "I've been working on that," Dean replies, licking orange dust of indeterminate origin off his fingers with apparent satisfaction that Sam will never understand. "And I'm thinking using one of us as bait is out of the question after tonight. They're on to us. But we could always do a little prank phone calling." He grins at Sam. Sam is quiet for a moment, wanting to say something about Dean having the brain of an 8-year-old, but then he gives the idea some serious thought. "Actually," he finally says, though slowly, "actually, that's not a bad idea." Dean gives him a look. "I don't exactly have bad ideas." Sam decides not to say anything to that and just makes an incredulous noise in his throat instead. "Tomorrow night, then," he says, "I'm taking a shower." Dean watches reruns of The Cosby Show to the background noise of the shower and Sam's low off-key humming that he probably thinks Dean can't hear. Dean's a little embarrassed by it, not because it's terrible, but because, wow, really, death cab? That's just wrong, just sick and wrong. He turns up the volume a bit and grabs Dad's journal off Sam's bed, anything to distract himself. He looks up ghouls and finds something vague about smiting and casting down, which Dean translates into, "Kicked ghost ass, have delivered smackdown." He tries not to think about Dad, but when he does, he finds it easier to be annoyed with him for one small thing or another, but never for leaving them. He can't ever quite bring himself to think about that. Sam gets out of the shower, and Dean makes some crack about his hair, and Sam retaliates by swatting Dean with his towel. Dean closes the journal and thinks they don't need Dad's cryptic words for everything. The next night, they're at it again. But this time, the cops in the area are responding to a very convenient break-in a comfortable distance away. "We have to work fast," Sam says quietly as they draw their guns and sweep their flashlights over the burial grounds. "I figure we have an hour tops, if these cops are as thorough as they should be." It turns out that they don't quite need the whole hour. There are plenty of ghouls around, but they don't seem particularly interested in hiding. In fact, as far as ghouls go, these are pretty combative. Hell, these are pretty combative as far as police-trained attack dogs go. It makes them a little bit easier to shoot, but a little bit harder to keep track of, so Dean can hardly be blamed if one slips up behind his back and he has to roll a bit to get out of the way. He completely fucks up his jeans in the process, which is just kick him in the crotch, spit in your face fantastic, and the ghoul is still practically on him and he still doesn't have a good shot. He's almost a little grateful when Sam blows the thing up from his right. Almost. The ghouls are gone and Sam helps him up, laughing. "Dude, I totally just saved your ass." "Hate to break it to you, Sammy," Dean says, inspecting the denim damage, "but I had it under control, so you really didn't." "Did too." "Sam," Dean says, with as much older brother dignity as he can manage, "we are not getting into an argument of did not, did too." "Are too?" Dean glares at him and says, "One of these days, Sammy, you're going to wake up in a coma." Sam just laughs. "You know," Dean says when they're back at the motel, "I heard somewhere that a little beer is good for you. I think I'm going to try overdoing it and see if I get superpowers. Want to be my sidekick?" Surprisingly, he's tried even more pathetic ploys to get Sam out of a motel room, including but not limited to physically dragging him, claiming the bar is haunted, and actually threatening to set the room on fire. "I thought I already had superpowers," Sam grumbles, flipping through Dad's journal, unbothered apparently by the carnal pleasures of normal men, the city of Baltimore, and this earth. His pen bobs neatly with each line of script over Dad's journal. "Yeah, but yours are lame," Dean argues. "They don't burn anything." "I don't have time, Dean," Sam says, changing tactics. "After I update this, I was going to check out some newspapers, and eh," Dean says noncommittally. "I like my plan better. Get up, get out, get drunk, repeat as needed." He beams at Sam. "It's just more fun." Sam doesn't look convinced, so Dean sighs and says, "Come on, Sam, when was the last time you went out?" Sam gives him a look. "I go out, I drink, I misbehave." He can't even meet Dean's eyes when he says it, just buries himself in the journal. "Sam," Dean says, "you haven't really been out since October." "That was a disaster," Sam replies resentfully. Dean laughs. "That was one crazy Yom Kippur." "Look, Dean," Sam says, "you don't need me there. You're just going to get drunk and have sex with some girl you mean I'll be in the way." "Not true," Dean argues immediately. "We might meet someone who needs our help." "Dean, you don't look for people to help at bars. You look for people to hump." But Dean knows he's made progress because at least Sam looks amused now. "Sometimes," he says gravely, "humping people is helping people. Must be why so many hookers are winning the Nobel Peace Prize," Sam snorts. "Well, look at St. Sammy sitting on his cloud of judgment, handing out life lessons to all us sinners," Dean says, getting a little tired of the argument. "Truth is, yeah, he could go without Sam, would be fine without Sam, but he worries. He can't help it. It's been months since Jessica's death, but he still worries that Sam is punishing himself. He knows Sam can drink when he wants to, knows that Sam used to enjoy it. They've been drunk together plenty of times, just not since Sam left Stanford. And it's not that Dean thinks Sam needs to drink. He just knows that Sam is a happy drunk, and maybe it's something Dean needs every now and then, to see Sam happy." So, when Dean says, "Sam," and his voice goes a little worn, he tells himself it's not really manipulation if he doesn't mean to do it, even though he knows full well that Sam can't resist him when he sounds like that. It's not that they play games with each other, it's just that they've learned all the rules by now. Sam gives in and they go to the bar. "I'll take that as a no, then," Dean says, sounding petulant. "I'd run away screaming, but it's been a long day," replies Sam. "Come on," Dean says earnestly. "Nothing says thank you like dollar bills in a G-string." "No," Sam says firmly. "It's not Dean's fault a stripper wanted to buy them drinks. He's just being chivalrous, he figures. He just wants to say thank you in her native language." "It's not Dean's fault Sam's his brother and obviously hates him. Dean just wants to have fun, and Sam wants to drag that fun deep into the woods and shoot it dead." "Just one little lap dance." "No, Dean. Bitch. Jerk." Sam gives Dean a sort of half-smile, and Dean can bring himself to forgive Sam for having a capacity for fun that can fit inside a matchbox without taking the matches out first. Sam is his brother, his geek baby brother, who will always be Dad's favorite, and who got all the height and the superpowers and is a better hunter than Dean is a lot of the time, and Dean doesn't hate him for any of it. Not really. Because at the end of the day, when the ghouls are banished and the strippers have left, Sam's the one that's still there. Sam's the one that came back. And even though Dean is Daddy's little soldier, as Sam likes to call him, Sam's the only one Dean trusts. Sam went to California once and didn't come back. The second time he did, and for Dean that means more than a lap dance. It's just sometimes he forgets that when he's drunk, so really he can't be blamed for inviting the strippers back to their room without telling Sam. Not really. Sam, of course, will fail to comprehend Dean's stripper logic, and Dean will be getting a copy of Oprah's magazine very, very soon, but they'll forgive each other for those minor trespasses because they're brothers, and more than that, they're family. And even uninvited strippers and Oprah's tips on how to be a secure, confident woman can't change that.